we're in the middle of discussing the last phrase of the Mishnah, that al shlosha dvarim ha'olam kayam, al Torah, al ha'avoda, the al gemilus chasadim. And we were explaining why the world exists on gemilus chasadim, why it stands on gemilus chasadim. And we said that one idea, the simplest idea, is that if there's not peace and harmony in the world, people don't do chesed one for the other, then society can't exist. So the existence of a functioning society depends on gemilus chasadim. People have needs, people can contribute to take care of those needs, and the opposite, the same people who can contribute to take care of some needs have other needs for themselves. And I think we said that that's what we say, the bracha achrona, borei nefashos rabos v'chesronon. The Rabbanu Shel Olam created all different kinds of souls, and chesronon, and what they're missing. Al kol masha barasa, and what they're missing, other things that God created can contribute to make up for what they're missing. And everybody gives, and everybody takes, and that's the way that society exists. That's the simplest level. Then last week we said that there is a much deeper level, and that is that somehow there is a connection between emuna and gemilus chasadim, between belief in God and doing chesed. And we quoted the Chazal that whoever does chesed is as if he believes in all the miracles that God performed when he took us out of Egypt, and whoever doesn't do chesed is as if he denies them. And we also said that Avram Avinu is the Amud HaChesed, he was the pillar of chesed. At the same time, Avram Avinu was Rosh HaMaminim, he was the choice believer. So belief and chesed somehow go together. And we started to explain that last week. In a nutshell, what we said last week was that emuna depends on being objective. If a person would look at this world objectively, then they would see that there must be a God. Because to assume that this world came about by blind chance, total accident, is unreasonable. It's more logical and more probable that there is an intelligent creator that created the world. And therefore, people who don't believe, it's not because their intellect leads them not to believe, it's because their bias leads them not to believe. People don't want to be subjugated to a God. They want to be free. So if you believe that the world came from the blind coincidences, then there's no rhyme and there's no reason to the world, and you do what you want. On the other hand, if you believe there's an intelligent creator that created this world, and he designed the world, then you are bound to his design. He designed you. He designed you to eat what you're supposed to eat and to dress the way you're supposed to dress, just as much, like we said last week, if a car designer designs the car to run on a certain gasoline and to have a certain oil in the crankcase, and you can do what you want. It's your car. But if you don't put the gasoline that the designer designed the car to run on, it's not going to run, or it may burn out the motor. So if there is an intelligent creator who created this world and created it for a purpose and designed it to fit that purpose, you have to find out what the purpose is and what the design is, and therefore, and follow suit. You have no choice. People don't want that. So therefore, with their subjective bias, they blind their eyes from seeing the truth and would rather accept the fact that the world is the result of a bunch of blind coincidental accidents, which mathematically, even scientifically, is very difficult. I saw that a major scientist, I don't remember who, but somebody from years ago said that you have to be a bigger believer to believe in evolution than to believe in God. Because it takes a lot more leaps of faith to believe in evolution than to believe in God. It's a belief. So who can believe in God? Somebody who is able to free himself of his bias and see things objectively. That's what we basically said last week in an hour. Now let's take it to the second step. So what does that have to do with chesed? Why is now belief dependent on being a person who does chesed? The Michtam Eliyahu explains that there are two kinds of people in this world. And they are not born like that. They are developed with their own desire. You can either be a person who's a taker or a person who's a giver. There's a very big difference between the two. A person who's a taker is concerned only about themselves. And a person who's a giver is concerned about other people. Now, before we go on, all that sounds very nice. Everybody should be givers and not takers. And it sounds very, very nice. But if you think about it, it's not very practical. But I'll tell you for two few reasons. First of all, if everybody in this world would decide to be givers, who would they give to? If nobody's taking. So we need that one token volunteer to take. Okay.
What? Because the older I get, the more I need.
In any case, yeah. Okay, we'll see. 1 second. It's not so simple. So how could everybody possibly be a giver? Secondly, we said that Avraham Avinu was the paradigm of chesed. That means he was the paradigm of giving and not taking. And you'll tell me that, well, we have in the Torah that Avraham Avinu didn't take anything from the king of Sodom. He came back with all the booty and all of the people that he repatriated, and Melech Sodom said, you just give me my people back and you can keep everything. And Avraham Avinu said, Michut v'adsroch nal, I won't keep a shoelace. Take everything. I am not a taker, I am a giver. So he didn't take anything. Beautiful. There's only one problem. There are other incidences in the Torah where Avraham Avinu did a good job of taking. Paro. Avraham Avinu took from Paro, right, a tremendous amount of wealth. He gave him presents, and he took from Paro. Right? In fact, he even said that if you say you're my sister, then they'll give us presents. And he took the presents. So here's Avraham Avinu, the big giver, but he's also a taker. He took from Malki Tzedek. It says Malki Tzedek brought out wine and bread, and he gave it to Avraham. And according to some, he gave him Meiser, tenth of everything he had. He gave it to Avraham Avinu, and he took it. And Avimelech, when he took Sarah, thinking that it was Avraham's sister, also to make amends, he gave Avraham and Sarah tremendous wealth, and they took it. So out of four times, Avraham took three out of the four and one not. He's a giver and not a taker. Seems to me like 75% of the time Avraham Avinu is taken. But the answer is that giving and taking does not depend on who is handing over the thing and who is receiving the thing. You can receive and be a giver, and you can give over and be a taker. Let's see how that works. Let's start with how it appears somebody who is giving over something and he's really the taker. Okay, I'll give you two examples. One example is the following, and then we'll apply it to Avraham Avinu even. One example of where a person appears to be giving but he's really taking is the following. As a rabbi, I've seen this many times. Person sick in the hospital, lo aleinu, and somebody comes and wants to fulfill the mitzvah, bikur cholim. They want to visit the sick person. And they come and they find that the person who's sick is sleeping. Now, one of the hardest things to do in a hospital is to get to sleep. Okay? My wife would tell me, Baruch Hashem, up until not too long ago, I was not in a hospital except to visit people. So I don't have so much experience, and I'm not looking for it either. But my wife had experience being in a hospital. Kanainahara, we have 11 children. She had 10 births, and we have twins. So she was in the hospital quite a few times. She told me the hardest thing in the hospital is to get to sleep. Because as soon as you fall asleep, they wake you up to take a sleeping pill. So somebody comes to visit someone in the hospital, and the person's asleep. Chutzpah. I came to visit you. What are you sleeping? Now, if my real intention is to help the person who's sick, then I will graciously let them sleep. If I want to let them know that somebody was here, I'll leave a note, tell one of the nurses to tell them that somebody was here, come back a different time. On the other hand, sometimes the person really needs somebody to visit them. And even though they fell asleep, they really would like to be woken up. So this is not, you know, a set rule that you should never wake somebody up when you come to visit. But under normal circumstances, you can always come back, and the person in the hospital would rather be sleeping than visiting with people. So the proper thing to do, if you really came for the sake of the sick person, is to graciously go home, leave a note, leave a message, and let the person sleep, and come back some other time if you want the mitzvah. But most people don't do that. Most people said, look, you know, I paid bus fare, I had to come here and sleep. I want my mitzvah. What kind of ridiculous thing is this? So if they are not too refined, they walk into the room, knock over a chair, make a tremendous amount of noise, and the person wakes up and says, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. Or they send in the nurse to see if the person's really asleep, meaning wake them up, I'm here. Now, in that situation, the person who is giving the visit looks like he's the one giving something to the sick person, giving them a visit. But the truth is that they're using the sick person to get their mitzvah. So the sick person is the giver, and the visitor is the taker. It looks like giving, but it really is taking. I'll give you another example. And this I experienced myself with good-meaning people. Right. Sometimes I travel to Chutz Laretz. So you spend 11 hours on a plane, and you get there, and there's only one thing that you want to see, a bed. Dead tired. But what host is going to put his guest to sleep? Right? At least you want to feed them a meal that's fit for a king, and you can't just feed them a meal. Right? What kind of host doesn't at least sit and talk with his guests for at least an hour or two? So here's this poor guest who doesn't want anything more than to find a place to lie down and go to sleep. And the host wants to be a good host. So they made a meal that's fit for a king. They sit there and talk for 2 hours. And the guest is graciously accommodating the host so he can be a good host. So he puts toothpicks in his eyelids to hold them open, right? Pretends that he is listening to every word of that's being said, right? Who is the giver and who's the taker? It appears like the host is the giver and the guest is the taker. But the truth is, it's the guest who's giving the host the ability to be a host. So many times, people can appear to be givers, but they're really takers. So giving is not necessarily who is handing over something. It's look at the whole picture and you can see who the giver and who the taker is. Okay, I always say that's why Avraham Avinu, when the three angels came in the guise of Arabs to his home, so he kept them outside under a tree. Now, I don't know, if I brought guests home and set them outside and didn't bring them into my house, my wife would have my head. What kind of host are you? Bring guests into the house and leave them outside? Why? So the answer, I think, is that Avraham Avinu saw these people were in a rush. He convinced them to come and stop in his house. When somebody's in a rush and somebody brings you that person into their house, okay, they know that that's it. They're not getting out of here. You're in the rush to get to a plane, to go to a meeting. Somebody invites you to their house. You know that you're stuck. You may never get out of there, right? You surely can't leave whenever you want, and you're going to miss the meeting. You're going to miss the plane, and you're sitting on spilkes. And therefore, Avraham Avinu said like this: if you're really in a rush, I'm not even going to bring you into my house. I'm going to sit you outside, picnic. You want to leave, as soon as you think that you have to leave, leave. You're not leaving my house. You're just leaving my tree outside. Not only that, if you're really in a rush, here's milchiks. Ready, prepared, take it and eat and go and run. But if you're really not in a rush, you just said that to make me feel good because you didn't want me to bother. So you said you're in a rush, but you're really not in a rush. And you're more hungry than you are in a rush. We're making a place you can meal. You want to stick around? There's going to be a nice place you can meal. That's why he offered the milchiks. And then he said fleishik, because it depends what you want. You want to eat and run? There's milchiks. You want to wait around? It's going to take time to prepare the fleishiks. If you're hungrier than you are in a rush, so stick around. He made his chesed to accommodate the guests, not to accommodate him being a good host. That's the difference. Now the other way around. How can you be a taker and really be a giver? So here there are three possibilities. One possibility is the following: that a person takes in order to give. If you never take anything, then you won't have anything to give. So sometimes you have to take in order to give. Person has to go and earn a living and take a salary, otherwise he doesn't have anything to give or to help other people with if he's destitute. But even more than that, the Satmar Rebbe, the Alter Satmar Rebbe, Bjorn. When I was a teenager, he used to spend his winters in Miami. So we went to see him. And I was very impressed. I'll tell you what I was impressed with. That he had a robe with bulging pockets with money in it. Bills, not just dollar bills. $100 bills. Tens, fifties. Why? People would come to him, and he had very wealthy Hasidim from all over the world. And they would give him a kvittel, and they would give him money. And he'd stuff it in his pocket. He wouldn't even look at it. Stuffed it in his, and his pockets were bulging with money. So I thought to myself, when I grow up, I want to be a Rebbe. It's a great business. All you do is got to buy a robe with big pockets. But then I watched, and he very quickly emptied those pockets. How? People would come with a sad story. They don't have money. They need money for this or for that. He'd lift into the pocket, wouldn't even look to see what it was. Took out a bundle of bills, gave it to the person. Very quickly, the pockets emptied. Then new people came, gave money. Can you say the Satmar Rebbe was a taker? No. He was a clearinghouse, right? He was just a person that was able to be the shliach to make sure the money got to people that the other people wouldn't know about. People came to him, and people came to him and wanted to give him this money. He didn't take it for himself. He gave it to distribute to people who needed it. So you can't say he's a taker. He's obviously a giver. Except he wasn't a rich man himself. So how could he give? He gave what other people gave him to give. So his taking was for the sake of giving. It says that the symbol of chesed is the heart. Good heart is a bal chesed. Why? So one of the reasons is because the heart is the ultimate giver. The heart gives blood to the whole body. It pumps blood to the whole body. The heart is the greatest giver. Except there's a big problem. If you learn biology, you know that the heart has two chambers that take blood from the body. The same amount of blood that the heart gives to the body is the same exact amount of blood that the heart takes from the body. So why is it a giver? It's a taker too. The answer is, the heart takes from the body is not for the sake of the heart. The heart has its own blood vessels that feed the heart. But the big blood vessels that take the from the veins, that bring the blood back to the heart, are not for the sake of the heart. They're in order that the heart then should pump that blood to the lungs and get it oxygenated, so it can then pump it back to the body oxygenated. So the only reason why the heart takes blood from the body is to be able to pump it back to the body with oxygen. So it's not a taker. The whole system, the whole cycle is giving. The whole purpose of the heart is to pump blood, oxygenated blood, to the body. But in order to do that, the heart has to take the blood back from the body to oxygen, to send it to the lungs to get oxygenated. So therefore, the heart is basically a giver. But in order to be able to give, it has to take. So therefore, that's one way that a person is able to take, but really he's a giver. He's taking in order to give. That was Avraham Avinu when he took from Paro. Avraham Avinu came to Eretz Yisrael, and he was responsible for his wife. He didn't have any children at the time, but he had students. People that he basically converted to belief in God and who depended on him, who traveled with him. He had a nephew, Lot. He was responsible to take care of these people. He comes to Eretz Israel and there's a famine. There's nothing. He's destitute. He has to find some way of supporting these people. They depend on him. So he leaves Eretz Israel and goes down to Egypt. On his way down to Egypt, he doesn't have a penny. So he stays in motels, and he tells the people, I want to do this on credit. I can't pay you. I promise you I will pay you as soon as I have the money, but at this time I'll have to owe you the money. And probably took quite a few rooms. He had a lot of people. And they gave him credit. And he took it on credit. He comes to Mitzrayim. They take away his wife. Right? Baruch Hashem, he was smart enough to say to his sisters, they didn't kill him. They took away his wife, thinking it's a sister. And the Ribbono Shel Olam intervenes and tells Paro a thing or two, and he gives back Sarah, and he, what's it called, lavishly gives presents to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu says, God promised to make me rich. I owe money, and I need the money to support my family. I'm not stealing anything from Paro. I didn't ask him for the presents. He's willingly giving me presents. Obviously, this is the way that God is making me rich. So I'm going to take it. Because if I don't take it, I won't be able to pay my debts. I won't be able to feed my family and those people who depend on me. So the reason Avraham Avinu took from Paro is because he wanted to give. Because if he didn't take, then who would suffer? Not him. His family would suffer. His students would suffer. The people that he owed money to would suffer. He didn't take anything that wasn't coming to him. He took something that Paro wanted to give him willingly in order to cover up for the terrible thing that he did, taking his wife. So he took it, because he took it with the intention of being able then to use it in a way that would fulfill his responsibilities. That kind of taking is called giving. Second kind of taking that's called giving. And that is the following. Give you first a Gemara where the source of this is. The halacha is that in order to effect a marriage, a man has to give a woman something of value in front of witnesses and say hareyat mekudeshesli. Okay? The man has to give the woman. If the woman gives the man, or if the woman says hareyat mekudeshesli, it's no marriage. The man has to effect the marriage, and he has to do it by giving the woman something of value. There is an exception where a woman can give a man something and the man can marry her with what she gave him. The Gemara says, by an Adam Chashuv, an extremely important person who doesn't take gifts just like this. People clamor to give this person a gift. They should take it from them. It's a covet for them, a king, a queen. Right? People give them gifts, not because they want to give the king and queen gifts, because they want the covet that the king or queen has my gift. Give the president a present, right? Because you want the covet of having the president take your present. Not only that, it's worth money, because somebody would pay someone to convince the king to take the present. Right? The king doesn't take presents from everybody. But if I have somebody who's an agent, and he'll be willing to pay the king a little bit, or one of his advisors, to convince the king to take the present. So it's worth me to spend money to have the king take my present. So the king taking my present has a monetary value. How much is it worth? It's worth $10 to pay somebody to have the king receive your present. So it's something of value. It's a commodity. So a woman, has a certain man that's extremely important, and she gives him a present. And she gets the covet from giving him the present. And she would have spent money on that. She would have spent money to someone to convince the guy to take her present. Okay? So she gives him the present, and he turns around and he says, with the value of what you would have spent to have me receive this present, because I don't take presents from everybody, and it's a covet for you that I took the present, I want to give you a bigger covet. I want to marry you with that. Now, re'atma kodeshesli. With the value of that you receive by me receiving your present. So then it's a good marriage. He gave her something of value. Right? But she gave him the present, and she got that enjoyment. And she would have paid money for that. With that money, he marries her. And that's okay. Even though she's giving, but really she's receiving. He's giving, because he's giving her the covet of taking her present. Okay. When I first became a rabbi many years ago, I was young, and I decided that I'm going to be a tzaddik. And one of the things I'm going to do is not take presents from anybody. Soni matam v'shichya, I don't want anybody to think that I take presents, and I have a salary, and that's it. I'm not going to take any presents. And people usually like to give the rabbi, they go to Eretz Yisrael, they come back with a present for the rabbi. Or on Yom Tovim, people give, they sell their chametz, they give rabbi something. So I decided that, no, I'm not taking anything. Right? I'm going to be a tzaddik. And this lasted for a few weeks or whatever. People would come back from Eretz Yisrael with a present for the rabbi. I said, I'm sorry, but my policy is not to receive any presents. I appreciate it, but I don't take presents. People want to give me a present. They had a bar mitzvah or something. Sorry, I don't take any presents. A few weeks into my rabbonis, one of my elderly balabatim came to me one morning. He said, Rabbi, you'll excuse me. I'm going to be very blunt with you, but you got to hear what I'm going to say. So I invite him into my office. He says, Rabbi, you think you're a big tzaddik, that you don't take presents from people.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, you are insulting these people because they want to give the rabbi a present. And you're telling them that their presents aren't worth anything to you and you don't want them.
Yeah.
You said, you don't want the present? Fine. Give it to somebody else. But take it graciously and give these people the honor of taking their present. They're doing it because it's an honor for them to give the rabbi a present. And you're telling them that you don't want their presents. You're no big tzaddik. You're insulting these people.
Yeah.
You didn't have to convince me too much. From then on, I took presents. So that's another way, right? You honor somebody by taking their present. You're the taker, but you're not really taking, right? I remember years ago here in Eretz Yisrael, somebody not in my community, but a community that I give shiurim in, removed from my community, gave me a present. At this time already I was taking presents. Except the present was something that I could never use. He gave me a few ties that I wouldn't be buried in, or surely not appear in public in. Not my style of tie. I didn't know what to do, right? On the one hand, I didn't want to insult him and tell him I wouldn't be caught dead in a tie like that, right? So you might as well give it to somebody else, maybe a clown or something. I don't know. On the other hand, I surely wasn't planning on wearing these ties. And every once in a while he saw me, and if he never saw me wearing the ties, that would be a bigger insult. But I took the ties, and I had a great idea. I don't usually go to that community, but I used to go to that community on Purim to give out Shalach Manos. So once a year I wore the tie, and it really fit the occasion. So every Purim he saw I'm wearing his tie, and he assumed that this was not the only time that I wear the tie. So he's got a lot of nachas that I wore his tie. And for Purim it was great. It was really hit the spot. So in any case, so that's the second way that a person can be a taker, and he's really a giver. He's honoring the person by taking. That's what Avraham Avinu took from Avimelech. Avimelech was a tzaddik. He, by mistake, took Sarah because Avraham said it's a sister. And Sarah was a prize catch. She was a tzaddikus. Avimelech was a tzaddik. He wanted Sarah. Right? And he was extremely embarrassed for what he did when he found out that it's Avraham's wife. So he wanted to cover his embarrassment by showing that Avraham Avinu has no hard feelings. That Avraham would take from him a present. Now, if Avraham would have said then, I'm sorry, I'm a tzaddik, I don't take presents, he would have been insulting Avimelech. Give Avimelech the chance to make amends. Give him the honor of taking his present. So Avraham Avinu took, but he really was giving Avimelech the kavod of taking the present. And Avimelech needed that kavod to cover up for the shameful thing that he did that he was so embarrassed for. So there he took, but really he was giving. And the third is the most important of all. The third way of taking, but you're giving. And that is, in every relationship, there is the giver and the taker. Okay, and usually it's a matter of sometimes this one gives, sometimes this one takes, sometimes this one takes, sometimes this one gives. But certain relationships, okay, there is usually one of the sides that wants to be the giver totally, only. Wants to be a martyr, never take. That side is usually called the Jewish woman.
The Jewish mother.
Mother and wife. Right? She has one little kid who barely can eat, okay, and they bring a banquet to the table. What does the mother say? No, give it to my child, I can't eat, I eat. What's it called? There's enough for an army. Your child's not going to starve if you eat. Now, women like to be martyrs, right? They like to never take and only give, okay? And they think that is very, very honorable, okay? But it's not really the case. Because if a woman always takes and never gives, always gives and never takes, then she is depriving her husband and her children from giving. And they become miskeinim, or always on the taking side. So she reduces her husband to a constant taker and never gives him the ability to give. The same thing with her children. So if a woman really wants to give and not take, sometimes the giving is giving someone else the ability to be a giver. That's also giving. Don't make someone the perennial taker because you don't want to take. Let them be givers too. Let them have a chance to give too. So even if you don't want, but give them the covet, not give them the respect of letting them be givers also, that they should feel that they're not constantly taking. That's also the same thing that went to Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek wanted to give Maisa to somebody. He had to give it to a Kohen. There were no Kohanim at the time. Avraham Avinu was considered a Kohen, according to that opinion. If Avraham didn't take, then Malki Tzedek couldn't give. So I enable Malki Tzedek to be a giver by taking. So I'm giving him the ability to give. That's also considered giving, even though you're on the taking end. So those are the three instances where taking can be giving, and the other where giving can look like giving, but it's really taking. Okay. So now that we've explained what it means, what the Michtam Eliyahu really means, that everybody should be a giver and not a taker, but it doesn't mean that you never should take anything. So in this world, there are instances where a person has to take, and there's instances where a person has to give, but his mindset should always be, I'm not doing it because I want. I'm doing it because that is what really is called giving in different situations. And I want to be a giver. But sometimes the giving is accomplished by taking. Okay, if that's the case, what's the difference between a giver and a taker? The taker is concerned only with himself. He's very self-centered, very, wrapped up in himself. And therefore, he's a very biased person. Everything is what's good for me, what's in it for me. And that kind of person has a hard time to be a ma'amin b'Hashem, to be a believer in God. Because to be a believer in God, you have to be able to be objective and not biased and not wrapped up in your own negias, your own bias. A person, on the other hand, who's always thinking of how can I benefit other people? Sometimes by taking, sometimes by giving. But I am basically a person who is a giver, right? So I'm not wrapped up in myself and in my own bias, so then I can be an objective person. I can be a believer in God. That's the connection between a person who's a chval chesed. His major look is on other people. What can I do for other people? And he therefore doesn't concentrate on himself, and therefore he's free a lot of his own subjectivity and bias. And a person who's only concerned about what's in it for me is a person who's constantly subjective and constantly biased, and that kind of person can't be a ma'amin b'Hashem. I think we said this last week, I'm going to say it again because it ends this idea very nicely, and that is the difference between a mirror and a window. A window, you see the whole world, and a mirror, you just see yourself. What's the difference between them? A little kesef. Kesef can mean money, but kesef can also mean desire. Kisufim. When a person is concerned only with his own desires, then he only sees himself. When a person is concerned about others and not just with his own desires, then he has a window and he can see the whole world. But once you put a little bit of that silver on the window, it turns into a mirror. That's the difference. And that's why emuna and what's it called, and chesed go together. Okay. One last thing, and that is that the Maral says that a person who is a Baal chesed is a more spiritual person, because he's not looking to keep material things for himself. He's willing to use them in the service of other people, to take his material things, his body, his material possessions, and use them for other people. So he becomes more spiritual in the process and less material, less physical. The more spiritual a person is, the more of a connection he has with the Rabbanu Shalom. The more physical he is, the less connection he has with the Rabbanu Shalom. With all of that, that is why the world stands on chesed. Because chesed is not just doing somebody a favor and creating a harmonious society. But it is also the foundation of emuna, of belief. It's the foundation of spirituality. And in addition to that, there's another foundation. There are two sources of being a Baal Chesed, of doing all the Gemilas Chasodim. Hachnosis Kalo, Hachnosis Orchim, Bikur Cholim, all of these things, the Rambam says, are under the umbrella of the Ahavtal Reyacha Kamocha. That is simply that a person loves his neighbor as himself, and that's the way you have a functioning society. If you don't have a functioning society, you can't have a Torah. So that's the foundation of the whole Torah, functioning society. That's the first idea, or the second idea. Another reason, another source for Gemilus Chasodim is the Halachta Bidracha, to emulate God. Just like God is merciful, you have to be merciful. God's gracious, you have to be gracious. But it goes beyond that. God visited the sick, Avraham Avinu, you have to visit the sick. God comforted the mourners, you have to comfort the mourners. God buried the dead, you have to be involved in all these chasadim. So a second source of gemilus chasadim is not necessarily for the sake of other people, for the sake of a functioning society, but for your sake. You have to be godlike. And God is a Baal Chesed. God created the world with Chesed. So gemilus chasodim, I think we said this, is like gemilus. You're finishing off God's chesed. God created the world for kindness. By doing kindness, you are basically imitating God. You're emulating God. And you're becoming more God-like. So in that respect, it has nothing to do with what you do for somebody else. That's one aspect of gemilus chasodim. It has to do with what you're doing for yourself in perfecting your character to be godlike. And therefore, the world exists on the fact that people are supposed to connect themselves, attach themselves, bond themselves to God, and the way to do that is to be like God. And if you will be doing these chasodim, you're walking in the ways of God, and you're perfecting your character, and you're more like God, so you're fulfilling the purpose of the world. And that's why the world stands on gemilus chasodim, for all these reasons. That's the meaning of the Mishnah, which ends, we finish the second Mishnah in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, over how many weeks, I don't remember, but plenty. Okay. It's at least, I think, 20-something shiurim. Okay, in any case, we are going to start the next Mishnah in Mirza Hashem next week. However, before we do that, I think we'll speak next week about the 3 weeks and the 9 days. And even though we don't usually do that, because if we can't do that, we'll never finish Pirkei Avos. As it is, we never finish Pirkei Avos. But because starting the next Mishnah is going to leave us in the middle over Bein Hazmanim till Elul, I think maybe we will push off the beginning of that for the beginning of the next season, and we'll finish off the next week or two until Rosh Chodesh Av, when we stop the shiurim anyway, and speak about the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and hopefully we'll speak about the new Beis HaMikdash that will be built before then. Okay.